Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas. Loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey guys, and welcome to Tech Stuff. This is Jonathan Strickland. Because of the holidays, recording time is scarce around here. So that's why I've decided to look back at another classic Tech Stuff episode. This one is from 2012, and it's all about the CES experience. In just a couple of weeks, I'll be in Las Vegas for CES 2015. Now, in this classic episode, Chris Paulette and I talk about the history of the show, what it's all about, and what it feels like to actually attend. Check it out.
Today, we're going to talk about the event formerly known as the Consumer Electronics Show, but I think it bears throwing that name in there for people who aren't as familiar with the acronym, which the organization behind it wants us to use when we talk about it.
CES. Yeah. And when this episode goes live will be while I'm in Las Vegas at the 2012 CES. We're recording this in December 2011, but by the time this goes live, I should be, if I've counted my calendar correctly, I should be in Vegas as you're listening to this if you downloaded it the day it came out.
Right.
So if you're listening to this right now and it's the second week of January, just remember Jonathan is in Las Vegas and is exhausted and crying.
Yes. And I'm not. Ha ha.
Right. Although he may be still crying.
Yes, that's true.
Because Chris does do that. But let's talk about the show, its background, and then I think we'll concentrate on that in the first half of our episode. And in the second half, this is one episode. The first section of our episode. In the second section of our episode, we'll talk about what the experience is like being at CES, because both of us have been.
Yes. Thankfully.
And in fact, we were both there at the most heavily attended CES ever.
Yeah. The show, you may actually be familiar with it. Yeah, there are a lot of people, the organization behind CES, basically is right in thinking that a lot more people know about this show than they used to.
Yeah, it's the Consumer Electronics Association that puts on the show. And that's an organization of around 2,000 companies that are in the consumer electronics industry. Mm-hmm. And these companies have formed this organization for many reasons. Part of it is the organization conducts a lot of market research to kind of find out what consumers are interested in, what the trends are going to be, so that companies can kind of get a jump on things and start developing products that are going to really appeal to people. You know, that it's always a challenge figuring out what people are going to be interested in and developing that, because you know most of these products have development cycles that last a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
So
in some cases.
Yeah. So to be able to identify what a trend is going to be not tomorrow but 2 years from tomorrow is a huge challenge. So that's part of what the CEA does. They also have networking opportunities. I mean, obviously, you've got a lot of these really important folks in various major companies, and they all tend to know each other through organizations like the CEA. And it's also about education around things like legislation and regulation, because a lot of these industries do have legislation and regulation surrounding them. So it's important for companies to be aware of that and to know what is and isn't cricket before they go into developing a product.
Well, but
CES is their big, like, that's the thing everyone knows them for.
Yes.
Because CES is just, it's
the public face of the organization.
And
really,
it's become such a huge event, especially from its humble beginnings.
Yes. Yes. But in essence, it's a trade show. Basically a big open floor with booths where companies are showing off their products, and there are people, representatives from the company, not necessarily company employees. Sometimes they're PR people that they've hired to talk about.
Hired guns who come in, and they've got fact sheets about all the different products that they have all memorized, and they are happy to spout off. But if you ask them anything that's not on the fact sheet, then they give you an email.
Here, take my card.
Yeah.
We'll get into what it's like. It's interesting to note that this, you know, we're in a gadget hungry world now.
Yeah.
In the 2000s, we're in the 21st century. Before that, you know, it's like the 90s were kind of like that too. The 80s, we had the Walkman. We had the debut of the compact disc player, which we'll get into in a minute.
Yep.
You know, we live in an electronics crazy world, but the show goes back a little before that to a time when there weren't, 50 different things plugged into our walls in our living room, sucking down juice. There were this organization and this event dates back into the 1960s.
Yeah, 1967 in New York City. That was the first CES. And back then, electronics consisted of one radio and a television that didn't work yet.
Not true.
No, that's totally – that was a complete – and well, the 1967 part was true, but the rest was a lie.
Right.
Yeah.
I did find a Flickr set of photos from early CESs back in the late
60s. I didn't know that Flickr was around in 1967. That's amazing.
The photos, however.
Oh, right.
Yeah, actually,
you can upload old ones.
It's interesting to see people lined up at the registration booth.
Yeah, where you can count them.
Wearing suits and ties.
Yes.
You know, because, hey, you know, they were members of the press. And
it was
members
a trade show.
You know, and it was a trade show. So you dressed up.
Yeah, it was.
Wearing their fedoras. And none of them were platypi.
Right. Anyway. Oh, there you are, Perry. So that first show, there were 200 exhibitors at that first show, and there were 17,500 people attending the show. And we should also point out that when we say people
– 200.
200 exhibitors, yeah. Oh, if only.
Yeah.
I could go for half a day and I'd be done. 17,500 attendees, and the attendees were all industry related. You know, it's not open to the public.
Why? Yeah. Why would you want to go?
Yes. Because I mean, the idea. I mean, I often ask myself that question. But no,
But I mean, there are variations on different TV sets.
And
different kinds of radios.
There's stuff that's interesting, but for the most part, what this is for, it's for the vendors, the manufacturers, to show off new products to retailers.
Yeah.
So that retailers will go and order the devices from the manufacturer and start selling them through their retail stores.
That's typical of a trade show. That's what they're for.
That's the big business that's going on at CES. And then you have the press as well that covers CES. And I think back in 1967, there probably weren't any bloggers.
New.
But it was all journalists.
And I'm assuming that a lot of them probably wouldn't have been interested in this, because this isn't as interesting to the reader in 1967, the general reader,
right,
as it would be today.
Yeah. The, you know, there did become kind of an interesting history at CES for new technologies to debut there, and we'll talk about those in a little bit. But when it first started, it was pretty – it was fairly modest. And it was not the only big trade show out there either. I mean, it's one of the ones that we hear about consistently today, but it's not the only one. It was actually a spinoff of another trade show, the Chicago Music Show.
Really?
Yep. Back in the day.
Interesting.
But and then you skip ahead by about a decade, unless you had – do you had specific things you wanted to talk about in the early history of CES?
No, not necessarily.
So I was thinking like back in – around 1978, the CEA decided to try something new and hold actually two trade shows per year.
Right. There was a winter and a summer.
Right. And the winter one was always in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And the summer one for the first couple of decades was in Chicago.
Yeah.
But then in 1995, CEA decided to try an experiment and move the summer city to different destinations and to kind of play with that and see how that went. Originally, they were going to go to Philadelphia in 95, I think. And then the problem was it was scheduled directly against the E3 event. And E3, the Electronic Entertainment Expo, is another big trade show. And that, so a lot of exhibitors were kind of expressing concern about that because they really wanted to be and retailers, too. They wanted to be at the other trade show as well. They'd have to pick between the two. And if you've got one show that has two shows a year and one that only has one show a year, well, then that's easy. You skip the one that has two. You can go to the other show and then you still have another chance to make it to the first one.
Mm-hmm.
So they tried that a couple times. In 1998, they decided, this doesn't make any sense. We're just going to do one show a year. It'll be that winter show, and it's going to be in Vegas, and that's how it's been since.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So,
you wanted to talk about some of the products, some of the technologies that have debuted at CES?
Yeah.
We actually have several Tech Stuff episodes about some of the technologies that have that were first shown off to people beyond the manufacturers at CES.
Yeah, yeah, and this is one of those things about the show. We were going to talk about what it's like to go to the show, but if you go to any of the booths, I mean, you're likely to see incremental changes in a product, the next version of a technology. We've got the new camera, which has a slightly faster ability to do burst photography. A few years ago, burst photography was new.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
it's an improvement.
I'd say 99% of the stuff you encounter at CES is just a slight evolution on technology we've already seen.
Yeah.
But that 1%.
there are variations on stuff. It'll be, things that are slightly smaller. Than last year,
or
they come in different colors,
or like a camera that incorporates a button so that you can share photos on social networking sites more readily.
Yeah,
that kind of stuff.
Well,
like a new feature that's in a pre-existing technology.
Yeah, we'll go to a press event, and we'll find out that the TVs are not any particularly larger or thinner than they were last year, but this time they're blue, because blue is the trendy color this year.
Yeah,
but you will find the stuff that is brand new and stuff that is that was previously unavailable to the public.
Yeah,
that will be including. And my first device was 1970. That groundbreaking, and when I mean groundbreaking, it's because it was large and heavy video cassette recorder.
Yep. Video cassette recorders or VCRs debuted at CES. It was the first time anyone outside of the industry got a chance to get a look at one of these. And those of you who don't remember, VCRs were a big thing.
Yeah, yeah. And one of your hits. Now, this – I have a list that came from CES itself.
Yeah.
The next of which was the Laserdisc player, 1974. And that was pretty huge.
Yeah, Laserdisc players ended up being more of a niche market. There was an enthusiast market that – it was extremely popular, and there's still devotees of the Laserdisc player out there today, but it never reached a kind of widespread adoption.
I'm going to do that thing that Jonathan hates it when I do, when I actually hold something up.
Yeah, especially since I don't have my glasses on.
Oh,
hang on.
Do you recognize this device?
That would be the first cheap digital watch from Texas Instruments.
Yes. It made its debut in the mid-70s.
I did recognize it.
$20.
Yeah, that was if you listen to our Texas Instruments episodes, then you know we actually talked about that, about how TI helped bring in this era of less expensive digital watches. Before that, they were all these luxury items that cost hundreds of dollars.
Transistors.
Yes, transistors.
Speaking of something that has transistors in it, a device that I owned in the 1970s. And this it's interesting that you brought up E3 in the mid-90s, because E3 is a much younger trade show. If you wanted to show off the next device, you would have to take it to CES, because there wasn't an E3 when it showed up in 1977, and that would be Atari's VCS,
yes,
video computer system.
Other consoles also first debuted at CES, including some that debuted after E3 started. That includes Pong. That was before E3. But NES, mm-hmm, that also debuted at CES in America. Granted, it had already been out in Japan.
Right, right.
But made its American debut in at a winter CES show. And then also the Xbox.
Yeah.
Traditionally, there are several keynote speeches that take place at CES. It's not all just out there on the trade show floor where you're looking at booths. They also have sessions that they hold.
Yes.
Where they talk about trends and technology, and companies will have a press event where they'll unveil the stuff that you would be able to see on the floor, but you'll get an early look at what it can do before you get to the floor. Well, Microsoft has had a keynote slot at CES for years.
Mm-hmm.
And at one of these, they unveiled the Xbox.
Yep.
So that was, it wasn't an E3 thing.
That was before Microsoft was big in games.
Yeah,
that was a pretty interesting announcement.
Huge splash for Microsoft, because, you know, Microsoft had been involved in games on the computer side, but not so much on the console side. So this was definitely a pretty big move, and it turned out to be a really successful one, which, you know, it's nice to be able to say that about Microsoft.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're right. I didn't mean to say that they weren't, because they had been releasing games for years,
yeah,
but not on the scale that the Xbox.
Right. It was all computer based, like Microsoft Flight Simulator type stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
The other technologies that debuted at CES, you talked about laser discs and VCRs. Yeah. Let's stay on that topic.
They're, 1981 was a big year.
Yeah.
Because that was when the camcorder and compact disc player were shown off.
CDs.
Yep.
And then DVDs also debuted at CES, and as did Blu-ray.
Yes.
It also debuted at CES.
Yep. Oh, and don't forget that earth-shattering announcement from Sony in 1993, the mini disc.
Yeah. But very popular in other parts of the world.
True.
Not so much in the United States.
High def TV here in the United States.
Yep.
Plasma TVs.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of stuff. And of course, 3D HD TV in the 2009.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about, first of all, let's talk about 2000. I've got one event in 2005. This was before we went, but in 2005, we have to talk about the embarrassing moment for Bill Gates.
Yeah, in doing the research for this, I wanted to look for products and things that made their debut, and that was mentioned in several. And I kind of feel terrible about it, that so many people remember it.
Sometimes stuff doesn't beep. That's the problem.
But for that to happen to the company's founder and
on a keynote speech. Here's what happened, because we're dancing around it. So Bill Gates is up on stage, he is he's demonstrating a Windows Media Center to a crowd at CES. And as he's demonstrating it, the system crashes and he gets the blue screen of death. So imagine being the CEO of a company. You're showing off your latest product on a device that has had its share of jokes directed at it for its the fact that it does tend to crash, and that when it does crash, you get this blue screen. For that to happen in public on the stage, that had to have been a little, a little bit embarrassing. And the press had a pretty good time with it, and still does. So anytime you see like a wrap up of big moments in CES, like Chris was saying, it tends to be included.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I have one more big moment.
Yeah.
In a similar vein that I think can easily launch us into the second half of our podcast, where we talk about what it's like to be at the show.
Yeah.
Jonathan and I, the only time that Jonathan and I attended CES together was in 2008.
Yes.
And there was another, I hate to use the term epic fail, but this was painful in its obviousness.
I know what you're going for, but I want to hear it.
We had an opportunity to be on the show floor early because we were members of the media.
Yes.
So we got a chance to kind of see. Now, most of the booths were kind of wrapped off so that you couldn't see it. But if you look at some of those old photo sets of old CESs, the booths were very bland. It would be a white booth with the name of the company written on it. Well, okay, it was black and white. So it looked like a white booth with the name of the company. Very, very sober in comparison with today's, where they have elaborate displays with speakers and all kinds of brilliant marketing materials
and overlays of stuff so that the cubicle doesn't look like a so that the cube doesn't look like a cube. It looks like something else.
Sure, sure. Yeah, and in some cases, you can't really see in it before they've started the show.
Right.
But in some cases, they can't hide what's going on. So we're walking around the show floor and getting an idea of what we're going to get an opportunity to see the next day. And on one side, we see Sony's enormous pirate ship of the Blu-ray display.
Yeah. So, they actually had this set, essentially. And it was because of Pirates of the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
And they had this big pirate ship type set in the middle of their booth. Now, some of these booths are small. Like some of them are only slightly larger than what you would find in an office cubicle.
Yeah, I mean, their marketing dollars don't grow on trees for some companies,
right?
So
because they are paying for square footage at this event, and other ones, especially of course from the big companies, are enormous booths.
Panasonic, Sony.
This is taking place. Most of these booths are at the Las Vegas Convention Center, which has I think 3.5 million square feet of space.
Yes, and in CES these days, it's not just one building.
No, it's also in
many other floors and some of the hotels.
Yeah. But anyway, you were saying, so the Blu-ray, right. The Blu-ray presence is there.
Yes.
Sony Blu-ray.
And it was obvious. And then a couple rows over, it wasn't even that far. It was on the same show floor.
Yeah, it was.
Was the, and this is, again, one of our very first podcasts that we did back when we were 5 minutes long.
Yeah.
HD DVD versus Blu-ray.
Right. HD DVD was supposed to be at CES, and the week before CES, there was a big stink because Warner Brothers announced that it was going to be exclusively Blu-ray from that moment on. And that was one of the few big movie studios that had still been backing HD DVD.
Yes.
At that point, HD DVD, which that's from Toshiba, right?
Yeah.
Toshiba had decided to pull the HD DVD presence from CES rather than have to endure a week-long onslaught of questions about what are you going to do now.
Yeah, yeah, and that was the thing. There were rumors that there was something going to happen with HD DVD. I guess in the weeks prior.
Yeah.
And then it happened right before. They had the set in place on the show floor, and it essentially never opened.
Yeah.
And we didn't know. We got the announcement while we were there.
Yeah.
that they were going to do it. And then as we were there, they said, yeah, we're done.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was pretty much the end of HD DVD. I had that written down too. Yeah. That also was, 2008 was a big year for CES. There were 141,000 attendees.
Mm-hmm.
So up from that 17,500 previously.
Just a few more.
I actually wrote down a couple of just little facts about every year from 2008 to 2011 because we were, I attended all of those.
By all
means. Just a couple little notes. So you covered HD DVD, which was one of the notes I had for 2008. The number of attendees was another. And also, I have what CNET picked out as the best of CES for each of these years.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
Because CNET is the official streaming partner of CES, or was in for those years. And so CNET always holds an awards ceremony where what they do is their editors go and hit the floor and they all look at all the different tech out there and then they get together and they decide what is the best thing on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you'll be interested to hear what won over some of these years because they're not all good stories.
Okay, go ahead.
So 2008 CNET Awards, this one's not bad, is the Philips Eco TV.
I remember
that. Show. Yeah. This was a 42-inch 1080p HDTV that had a lot of energy-saving technology built into it because mm-hmm. 2008, I think Chris can remember this too. 2008, I think, was the big trend was green technology.
Absolutely
was. In 2008. You can usually spot some pretty prevalent trends each year at CES, mm-hmm. too, mm-hmm. if you attend. We can talk a little bit about that as well. 2009, that was when the LG Watch Phone was on the show floor.
Oh, yeah.
Which never came to the United States.
But it made a huge hit at the show.
Yeah, got a lot of buzz because everyone's saying, oh, it's the Dick Tracy watch, except it's got video and everything, and it's a touchscreen interface. And you know what? We don't have the LG Watch Phone, but we do have the iPod Nano that has a lot of the same functionality, just not the phone part.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. But what won that year, CNET's prize went to the Palm Pre.
Oh, yes.
Which is kind of sad.
Yeah.
So just in short, Palm Pre from Palm never really took off. It very much impressed everyone. Everyone thought that it was going to be a real competitor to the iPhone.
Yeah, that was basically the debut of their brand new operating system,
WebOS. WebOS. And then it just never got traction. It took about 6 months from CES before it even hit the market. And by then, the buzz had died down.
Yeah.
So it never really took off. HP ended up buying Palm. The Palm phones began to disappear. WebOS became a tablet-only thing. And then 2011 happened, and no one really was sure what was going to happen with WebOS because HP was saying, we're done with it. And then they're like, no, we're not done with it, so we don't know if we're done with it. And now they're saying, we're not done with it, and we're moving it to open source. So that's been the journey of WebOS since CES 2009.
Ouch.
Yeah, pretty crazy. And we did a whole episode on Palm, so you mm-hmm. can listen to that if you want to know more about that company. 2010, The big thing I remember from 2010 is seeing Intel's Nehalem processor
running.
I had written an article about the Nehalem processor, and this time I got a chance to see it, and I was very much impressed. The big win for that year was Panasonic's 3D HD TV. That's what CNET gave the award to. Mm-hmm. And, of course, 3D television still has not really taken hold. It just hasn't really gained that much traction. There are a lot of televisions out there that have 3D built into them, but we have not seen 3D become a real powerhouse in home entertainment.
Yeah, and actually, you're mentioning the Nehalem processor kind of reminded me, too. A lot of the stuff on the show floor, I mean, we've had many people tell us that they think going to CES would be a whole lot of fun. And yeah, in some ways, getting the chance to see these gadgets and cool toys
and
all sorts
of
stuff.
And talk to some of the people behind it.
Yeah, that part is kind of cool. But there's a lot of stuff where, I mean, looking at a motherboard with a Nehalem processor, I mean, what Intel does when they show that kind of thing off is they show a computer running stuff that, you know, they're talking about the optimization. But if you look at the processor, I mean, it's a chip.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff there that's just it's good and it's important and it's nice to have in your next computer. You know, oh, man, look how fast that is. I'd like to have that. But you don't stay there all day and just marveling at it because it's the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, we can talk about some of that.
It is cool.
We can talk about some of that also when we get into our personal experiences because I've got a whole rant I could go off on. But not about Intel, though.
But they're expected to show a new processor this year, right?
Ivy Bridge. Yeah, I saw Sandy Bridge last year. And again, that was very impressive. So that was something for 2011.
TikTok.
Last year being this year as we're recording it. But last year when you're listening to this. 2011, yeah, I saw Sandy Bridge, and that was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That was also – it was a big year for tablets and smartphones last year, 2011.
Yep.
The Motorola Atrix, which was the smartphone that could dock with a laptop-like docking device, and it could power that laptop. So you were actually using the smartphone's operating system but in a laptop form factor.
Mm-hmm.
BlackBerry Playbook was there to play with. That was the first time I got my hands on one of those. Lots of different devices. CNET gave the award to the Motorola Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
Which again, just never really, I mean, it hasn't done terrible in the, it's not a failure or anything in the market, but I don't think it ended up making as big a splash as we thought back when we were at CES.
Yeah.
And part of that is just, you know, that was sporting the new Honeycomb build of Android.
Mm-hmm.
Well, within that same year, we've seen Ice Cream Sandwich come out, or at least unveiled.
Ice cream.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's one of the issues with CES, too, is that sometimes the stuff that you see at the show that you think is going to be like, oh, my gosh, I can't wait for this to hit the market.
Sure,
it's going to be the next big thing. Some of it never comes to market,
mm-hmm.
and some of it will come to market and then just fizzle. Let me get the one item that never came to market that just drove me crazy.
I know what this one is.
The Lenovo U1.
I knew what that one was.
Oh, the Lenovo U1, which was a notebook computer where you could detach the screen from the base of the computer and it would become a tablet. And it actually had two different operating systems. When it was a notebook computer, it was running Windows 7. The original build I saw, when you detach the screen, it would switch to a Linux-based operating system. The second time I saw it, which was CES, I can't remember if it was 2010 the first time or 2009. Anyway, the second time I saw it, they had switched the tablet operating system over to Android. And in both cases, they were hoping to aim for a summer release, and it never happened. It did. There were some limited releases in China, but nothing in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the tablet device I really wanted because I wanted something that I could use as a full computer, or I could detach the screen and use that as a tablet so that I could preload all the things I needed before detaching the tablet part, and then I'd have it to refer to on the tablet.
Mm-hmm.
That way, for all the heavy data processing type stuff or word processing, you know, word entry kind of things, I could use a keyboard instead of a touchscreen device. And yeah, I'm still sad that never really came out. But yeah, let's talk about what it's like when you go to CES. We'll mostly be talking about from the perspective of press because that's what we are. We've never exhibited at CES.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I can say that it's if you're interested in gadgets or you're a member of the media, it's the experience is not going to be terribly difficult because you're going to want to see as much of the show as you can. Now, the show takes the better part of a week.
Yep.
And, you know, as I mentioned and Jonathan mentioned before, it's quite a lot of square footage in terms of show space.
Yeah.
It's grown very, very large. There's even an outdoor section where they have mobile electronics and things.
And cars.
Cars. Yeah, that was the first time I saw a Fiat 500 because Microsoft was showing off its Sync
yep.
operating system, and they had a Fiat 500 there. And I thought, wow, man, look at this. They brought a Fiat overseas for just for this show.
A lot of the audio exhibitors are in hotel suites in
yes.
one of the nearby hotels because you know you don't want to have to try and show off your high end audio equipment on a show floor that's just clamoring with noise.
Yeah.
You need to have your own little area so that you've at least kind of blocked out most of the ambient noise so people can really hear what your stuff can do.
Yeah. To quote Dr. Seuss, oh, the noise.
Yeah.
It's a loud environment. People are talking. There's media playing from pretty much everywhere.
Yeah. The central hall, you get there's usually a few. The one audio areas you'll hear the most are the car sets, like the audio stereo systems that go into cars.
Mm-hmm.
Those tend to actually be on the show floor.
Yeah.
And they tend to drown everything else out. I know that when Leo Laporte first got his This Week in Tech table set up over at CES, he was put directly across from an area where they had several of these exhibitors showing off these incredibly powerful stereo systems. And so through most of the TWiT footage of that first year, you hear doom, 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 like in the background. And like people are shaking when they're sitting there at the table. It was pretty intense.
Yeah, they even had in 2008 when we went, they even had marine electronics. They had boats going doom, doom.
Yeah. Yep.
So
and
it was pretty interesting.
So some of these booths that you would see are wide and spread out, and in some cases it's that the company wants to make a big statement but doesn't necessarily have that much to show. Sometimes it's that they need the space, like the Parrot drone.
The first time
I saw that, you know, that's the it's got four helicopter type blades.
I've seen it called corners. A quadricopter.
Yeah,
a
quadricopter. That's not bad. And you can control it through a mobile device. It used to just be iPhone,
mm-hmm.
but they've expanded it a little bit since then. But that was really pretty cool. And it took up a lot of space, but it consistently drew crowds.
Yeah.
Taser tends to have its own space. Last year I saw them tasering people. That was kind of interesting.
I bet that was a shock.
Yeah, I bet it was. They got a real charge out of it.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
For every booth that you see that has really cool tech in it, there are about 15 booths that have things like computer cases or smartphone cases or smartphone decals to put on, I mean, like stuff that's accessories for things that you already own. So it's not as exciting. It's definitely stuff that people want. So that's why it's at the trade show, because retailers are going to be looking around to see what's available and say, oh, you know what? I want my store to carry this line of smartphone case because I think that would really move. But as a member of the press, or maybe just a member of the general public, if somehow you'd found your way into CES, it wouldn't necessarily be like, oh my gosh, look at that smartphone case.
Well, and some of the manufacturers too aren't necessarily cutting edge. You might see a headphone manufacturer there, and they're not making the latest noise canceling headphones, or that, hey, that would come in handy at CES, or you know, the high-end cans that you see people paying $300 or more dollars for. You'll see low-cost headphones. Look, we've made you know, earbuds with better response that retail for $19.99. And that's not going to be exciting news necessarily, but it might be for retailers who are going, hey, I can offer a wider range of low-cost stuff and sell these in my store. There are a lot of manufacturers from overseas who are showing off how they've been able to manufacture things in smaller packages and for lower costs. So you might be able to fill out your low range if you're looking for stuff to include in your store.
Yeah, there's actually an entire section that's essentially from Asian markets, and it's all these really tiny booths filled with some of it's filled with some of the weirdest electronics you've ever seen. Like, it's all the stuff that you would typically say, wow, that clearly had to come from Japan, because it's just so unusual. But also a lot of the other, like the less expensive, the more affordable types of electronics, you know, the not the cutting edge stuff, but the stuff that has been refined to a point where the price has really come down. And then there are other sections of the floor where you're going to see the cutting edge, like the top stuff that's coming out the next year. These are usually from the really, really big companies. I mean, once in a while, a small company will really throw you. Now, you'll go to some small booth and you're like, wow, the Parrot drone in a way was like that. A lot of people said, wow, that's really innovative. More often than not, you're going to see people talking about the big companies like Sony, Panasonic,
Toshiba, LG.
LG always has a really big presence there. Intel, Microsoft, these are the companies that have some of the largest booth spaces on there. And like, some of the booth spaces for some of these companies are the same as if you took 10 of the other exhibitors together and put them all in the same space.
Oh yeah. I mean, these places are in a lot of cases larger than a small retail store.
And the
result of that is you can spend a whole day looking at a small section of the floor, because you need a few minutes to take in what it is you're looking at. So, I mean, you could spend a lot of time on your feet looking around, and it's it can be wearying, especially if you're carrying 20 pounds of
laptop
paper press kits and 6 pounds of laptop.
They don't do the paper press kits as much anymore.
Thank goodness. But that was the year that I went, and I had a lot of stuff.
No, wait. There was a point, I remember Chris and I both at one point took out all the press kits we had, and it was probably at least 50 pounds of of paper.
Yeah. Thankfully, they don't do that anymore.
Yeah, no, now,
at least not as much.
Now it tends to either be on a thumb drive or they give you a card that has a link to an online press kit, which is so much better. Also, it makes it way easier to get hold of things like images and stuff if you need to run an article. So that fantastic. Keep that up.
But it goes on for days. I mean, you can – after the first day or so, you can be quite tired from the experience. And there's just a lot to see and a lot to do.
There are three main halls in the convention center. Mm-hmm. There's North Hall, Central Hall, and South Hall. And South Hall is the one that I typically hit first. And several of the big name companies are in South Hall. Central Hall has more of the big name companies, and I believe it's the Central Hall that has two floors, which makes that even more intimidating. And then the North Hall tends to have a lot of the vehicle stuff. Some of it's in the Central Hall, but most of the vehicle stuff's in the North Hall. The stuff that's not on display outside the convention center.
Right.
They also will have special zones set up now at CES. So, like, they'll have a green zone area where they've got a lot of exhibitors who all specialize in green technology together. They'll have an educational zone. They'll have a senior citizen type zone. So, technology that's specifically geared toward meeting the needs of elderly users. So, that's kind of interesting that, you know, these different zones can be in various halls. It all depends on, you know, how CES is arranged that particular year. Then you've got all the different ones that are in the nearby hotels. For example, the Venetian often has its own the audio section. Also, the Venetian and Sands Expo Center tends to have a hall, display hall as well. It's a smaller one, doesn't have as many big names in it, but it's another exhibitor hall. So it's not just the Las Vegas Convention Center, which is already huge. The Hilton tends to have several suites that people are using, that exhibitors are using. Sometimes you have companies that don't rent space at CES, but they show up and get a suite at a hotel, and then they try and entice you to come over to the hotel so they can show off their stuff without actually being part of the CES. So there's that issue as well. And then there are all the parties. Okay. So people who have never been to CES who are saying, wow, this sounds like it's incredible. And there are parties? That sounds amazing. Let me tell you what a CES party is like. So a CES party, you will eat well, and you will – You could potentially drink as well. I don't drink, so that means nothing to me. I mean, I drink water, but I don't drink alcohol, so that means nothing to me. But you go, you'll see some cool tech, and then you try and talk over the sound of everyone else talking, plus the ambient music, which is usually about three or four times louder than it needs to be, in order to explain who you are and find out more about this product. It's all business talk. It's not fun stuff. Like it's not a party you go to have fun. It's a party you go to network, to get a little more information about stuff. It's still working.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, you're dancing the night away. It's not like that. Although maybe there are some of those CES parties, and those are just the ones I've never gone to. So now at this point, I'll try and go to a party now and then, because it is a really good way to network with people, and it is a very good way. Like if you write about how stuff works, like I do, it can be invaluable to get the business card of an executive so that you can contact that person and say, hey, I'm working on this article about the thing that you specialize in. Is there anyone at your company I could speak with so I could get an expert involved in writing this article?
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. But now I will often try and save the time after the show floor closes to getting together with some of my peers in tech journalism to sit down and just kind of talk about what we saw and kind of share knowledge, because there's a lot of that at CES. It's nice. You know, you don't see a lot of, at least in my experience, I don't see a lot of journalists kind of shutting themselves off from everyone else and not talking for fear of losing the scoop. Mm-hmm. It tends to be a lot of people sharing their information and kind of, you know, figuring out what are the trends? What is it that we're seeing? What does this mean for the upcoming year? And that to me is fascinating. That's one of the parts that I like the most about CES. So sitting around in the old, what used to be the Star Trek experience at the Hilton with folks from the Twit Network or from Revision 3 or from CNET. I mean, that's fantastic. I love that.
But it's it's not all fun and games. That's for sure.
No, it's a lot of work. It is probably. It's one of the most physically tolling things I've had to do at How Stuff Works. It's by the end of the day, you feel it.
Yeah. And then you get up and do it again.
Here's a hint for any of you who are doing CES for the first time this year. If you're listening to this, it might be too late. So if it's first time you're doing CES will be 2013. Here's what you need to know. If you plan on doing something after the show floor closes and you go back to your hotel room to set stuff down so that you can go back out, do not sit down and or lie down, because that's it.
Yeah.
You're not moving again. Yeah. I have made that mistake so many times. But I mean, all those chairs and beds just look so comforting after you've been on your feet all day long. It's a very interesting trade show. I don't think it's as phenomenal or magical as outsiders seem to think it is.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's because I've covered it for 4 years now. So if you were to experience it, the way I try and explain it to people is, if you're a journalist, imagine walking into the world's largest shopping mall, but every single store just sells electronics. And it's your job to go into every single store and look at every single shelf, at every single device, and then you're going to write up what the best was when you're done. And the problem is that 80 to 90% of the devices are, you know, it's not that they're bad, they're just not interesting.
Yeah.
And you have to do this through the entire mall. That's not fun. But there are fun elements to it. When you do stumble across that thing that is debuting for the very first time at CES, there is a level of excitement there that is, you know, it's hard. You can't dismiss that. That is pretty incredible to experience.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed that look back. Now, if you are at CES in 2015, you might actually see me there. Be sure to swing by the Sharp booth, where I'll be exploring how display technology has become so important in our lives. And as always, if you have a suggestion for a future episode, or you just want to write in and say hi, my address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com. You can also contact me on Facebook, Twitter, or Tumblr. I've got the handle TechStuffHSW. We'll talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.